Morning. Today's Daf and Shabbos is Yud Dalad. We are on Yud Gimel Amud Beis at the two dots towards the bottom of the Amud. Shmona Asar Davar Gazru. We are going to be spending today, tomorrow, and Sunday morning. It'll be a three-day venture where we're going to learn together the 18 Gzeiros. 18 Gzeiros is referenced to by the Mishnah, but the Mishnah doesn't elaborate what the 18 are. If you look back at the Mishnah towards the middle of the Amud and you give Amud Beis, Elo min ha'alachos she'amar Balias Chananya ben Chizkiah ben Garon. These are from the halachas that were said over in the attic of Chananya. Alu l'vakro, they went to visit him, and Nimnu v'rabu be'shama be'silo. And the Mishnah told us that there was a count there. It was a makeshift meeting that took place in this attic. And the Yurches Dvarim Gazur Barbayom, and 18 enactments were made on that day. So, an unusual historical circumstance in which the students of Shammai and Hillel, called them Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, got together and voted. And on this day, the decision went in favor of Beis Shammai. The count of 18. Now, all the Mishnah tells us is that ve'elu min halachos. These are from the halachos. So, the Mishnah is making reference to the previous Mishnah. When the previous Mishnah, we introduced ourselves to two gzeros, two rabbinical decrees. One of them is delousing, and the other one is reading by the light of a lamp. The delousing may also be rooted in the fact that you may come and tilt the lamp, as we already spoke about extensively. There are another 16 to go. The Mishnah doesn't tell us what the 16 are. And so over the course of today, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be learning a selection of the gzeros. The Gemara, interestingly, never gives us a definitive list of what the 18 actually are. The Gemara just simply is going to give us a selection of them, and the majority of them that we're going to be dealing with over the course of the next couple of days are going to be Tum and Tahara. So the gzeros of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel primarily have to do with Tum and Tahara, but as we know, it's not exclusive to Tum and Tahara, as we already just went over. Two of the gzeros have to do with Shabbos and Hilcha Shabbos. What exactly, where can I find a list of the 18? So the Rishonim, each one of them give their own version of what the list of the 18 are. And at this point in time, it's not unanimously decided upon by all Rishonim what exactly the list of 18 is comprised of. We're certainly going to be able to easily identify 9 of the 18 in the upcoming Gemara, but then there's another 9 more to go. 2 of them go back to the previous Mishnah. That's 11. Okay, there's another 7 to discover. They're there. It's just a question of accounting and how to count them up. If you want to go next level in terms of the 18, which we're not going to, take a look at the Rambam here in this Perush Mishnayos, where the Rambam counts not one, not two, but three different lists of 18. 18 halachas in which Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agree upon, 18 which was decreed on this day that we're describing right now, and another 18 which stands as a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, obviously in which we side with Beis Hillel because we always side with Beis Hillel outside of these 18 gzeros, where they voted and Beis Shammai came out to be the ruling party. Okay, so we are not going to go through the Rambam. We're not going to go through the three lists of 18 of the Rambam. However, we are going to go through our Gemara, and we're going to become acquainted now with, of the 18, we're going to spend time today learning 9 of the 18. I'll say all that by way of introduction, and let's get underway. The Gemara starts off, V'shmona asa davar gazru. So, my name is V'shmona asa davar. So, what are the 18? So, it sounds like from the way the Gemara is prefacing itself, is that it's going to go through all 18, but as we're going to learn together, we're not going to systematically count out 18. Well, first what we're going to do is we're going to quote a Mishnah in Zavin, the fifth parak of Zavin, a Masechta found in Seder Taharos. Obviously, even as going through the daf, we don't have familiarity with it because it is not part of the daf Yomi cycle, but the Mishnah over there says, Ela posa mesa truma, these are things which pasul truma. Now, it's at this point in time, I could give a lengthy introduction to Tum and Tahara, but I'm not going to. If this is your first venture into Tum and Tahara, so admittedly, this is going to be challenging. What I can say, just from my own experiences, is that the more times you go through it, so the better and clear the understanding is going to be. Hopefully, I can commune a clear understanding, but I, at this point in time, will not be giving an extensive introduction to the world of Tum and Tahara. For our purposes right now, you'll see over the course as we go through this, So I am going to assume a certain amount of basic knowledge regarding Tumat Tahara. And just the more you hear it and the more you become familiar with it, the easier all this will flow. The challenge of learning about Tumat Tahara, of course, is that none of it is Nogei Lamaisa. It's not practical halacha. And it, to us, it's esoteric. But nevertheless, though, the rules are very clear. And there are going to be a couple of rule breakers, which is what the trick is in learning the gzeros of the Yud Ches Davar. But the rules are very clear cut. But to us, it's an esoteric learning in that it's not practical. We're going to start with this mission in Zavin. Ela Posen the Truma. These are things which are going to disqualify Truma. Now, as we've said time and again, whenever discussing Tumat Tahara, when we use the word puzzle, what we mean to say is that the Truma is going to become Tameh, but it's going to be the end of the road. We know that Chulin only gets up to the becoming a Sheni. Truma can become a Shlishi. And so therefore, if Sheni comes into contact with Truma, the Truma becomes a Shlishi. And because it cannot go and communicate the Truma to another item of Truma, so therefore the Truma is described as being Pasal, meaning it's Tame, but also that's it. It's the end of the line. So these things are going to pass through the Truma, which means that what we're describing over here is on the level of a Sheni. And that is the following. Ha'ochel ochel rishon. Number one. And I'm going to count it out over here. Now, in the Mishnah, it's going to count out to number 10. But as we're going to learn together, it actually gets pared down to 9. And you'll see why when we go through today's daf. Somebody who eats food, which is a rishon l'tumah. So this person now, who has eaten the food now, is at the level of a sheni l'tumah. Now, on a Torah level, this, of course, does not work. Because on a Torah level, a person only can become tummy from an ava tumah, only from a source of tumah. Food, by definition, is not an avatumma. Now, the meat of an animal that went unshechted is an avatumma. Okay, so notable exception. But generally speaking, when we're talking about produce, or any food for that matter, it's not an avatumma. So you, when you come into contact with the food, and even if you were to eat the food, you're not going to become tame on a Torah level. Notable exception is going to be nivlas of tahor, the carcass of a kosher bird that was not shechted. So the consumption of that does make you tame. But that's notable exception. So when you eat a food, you do not become tamei on a Torah level. And what the Chachamim slapped is a gzera derabbanan, rabbinic decree, that you're going to become tamei when you eat food that's on a status or on the level of a rishon. Number two, ha'ochel ha'sheni. Additionally, if you eat food that's on the level of a sheni, you now become a sheni l'tuma. Again, this is, of course, on a derabbanan level, as we just explained on number one. Hashosem mashkim tameim. Somebody who drinks liquid, which is Tameh. So now, once again, on a Torah level, you do not become Tameh. But nevertheless, midrabanan, the Chachamim slapped on you a Tuma derabanan. And you're on the level of a Sheni. And if you touch Truma, the Truma now will become Pasal. Number four. Habarosha Veruba Bamayim Shoavim. If your head, the majority of your body, come into contact with water that was collected in a kli, meaning to say that you have toveled in the mikvah, and immediately after you toveled in the mikvah, so you then basically took a shower. So under these circumstances, you now are going to become a sheni l'tuma, and you will pass a truma if you touch a truma, despite the fact that you just went to the mikvah, and obviously now you're tahor, but nevertheless, if you take a shower subsequently, you are now going to be a sheni l'tuma. Number five, tahor v'isha naflu al rosha rubo shoshalugim maim shuavim. You have a person who's tahor lagamre, and what fell on his head was the majority of his head, and the majority of his body was three lugan of water, which was collected in a kli. So you are going to become now a sheni, and you're going to pasul truma. Now, number five and number four seem to be awfully similar to one another, and when we get to the Gemara is going to make that notation, and the Gemara is going to explain. Number six, Sefer. And number six is interesting. Number six tells us that any Kisvei Kodesh, and we're talking about, says Rashi, either Sefer Torah, Sefer Nevim, or Sefer Ksuvim. So it's going to passel Truma if it comes into contact with Truma. Now, just for a moment, if you could digest that, it's wild. The idea that we're talking about a Sefer Kodesh, we're talking about a Sefer Torah, and yet the Chachamim slapped on it the Sefer Torah, a status of a Sheni L'tuma, in that, if that Sefer now comes into contact with Truma, the Truma now becomes Pasul. Rather amazing, and definitely demands an explanation. All of these demand an explanation, And the Gemara is going to explain all of them. Number 7, Hayadayim. Hands. Hands are Ishini Latama. Your hands come into contact with with Truma. The Truma now becomes puzzle because hands have the status of a Ishini Latama. Now, right away, we know that this is Gzeira Derabanan. We know it because that's all we're discussing today, our Gzeira Derabanan. But we know it also because, and we've said this point numerous times in the past, we know this because min haTorah, the tumah of a person is either all or nothing. The entire person is tameh, or none of the person is tameh. Never min haTorah is a person sectioned off where part of his body is tameh and the other part is not tameh. If a person comes into contact with an avatumah, he becomes tameh in total. So the idea that the hands and only the hands are going to become tameh just by virtue of the fact that we're sectioning off a body part for tumah is indicative of the fact that this is a tumah derabanan, not a tumah deraisa. Next, the Mishnah mentions is tful yom. You notice I didn't count it. Tful yom, it made it into this Mishnah in Zavin, and it sounds like this is a gzera derabanan. The Gemara is going to object. We're going to see this a little bit later this morning. Because Tful Yom is not a Tumah Derabanan, it's a Tumah Da'araisa. A Tful Yom is describing somebody who toveled in the mikvah and is waiting for Harav Shemesh, he's waiting for sunset. As we've gone over numerous times, in order for a person to become Tahor, he has to A, tovel in the mikvah, and then B, wait until sunset. And between that period, those periods of time, he is what's called the Tful Yom, and he has residual Tumah. The degree, the level of Tumah that he has is open for a debate, but the Mishnah here in Zavim is telling us he's a Sheni L'Tumah. That's all well and good. That's not on a Derabanan level. That's on a D'Oraisa level. And so how it made into this Mishnah in Zavim, so we're going to discuss that later, but to spoil it, the Mishnah, the Gemara later on is going to tell us that we just simply have to delete it from the Mishnah. It doesn't belong in the Mishnah. Not that it's not true, but it's not categorically, it's not Gzera Derabanan. It's a Tumah D'Araisa. Number 8, Ha'ochlin. And number 9, Ha'kelim. And Shenitmu B'mashkin. If they come into contact with a liquid, they're both going to pass al Truma, meaning they become now a Sheni, either food or Kelim that comes into contact with a liquid. And consequently, when the food and the liquid then, in turn, come into contact with Truma, it'll pass al the Truma. And that was it. And that was a list of 9 Tumah Derabanans that were instituted, and the Gemara points out that these 9, what do they have in common? They're 9 of the 18, meaning of the Yud Ches Davar, of the 18 enactments that were made on that day, that were voted on that day, so 9 of them find themselves in the Mishnah in Zavim. So basically now we can safely say that half of the Gzeiras are rooted in the world of Tumah Tahara. And for the rest of today, what we're going to be doing is dissecting and explaining each one of them and why the Chachamim made Gzera by each and every one of them. We are on the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Beis. The first thing we're going to do, it's a technical point, and it'll be quick, is that we're just going to fine-tune exactly who the author of this Mishnah is in Zavim. The Mishnah in Zavim is anonymous, and so the Gemara just simply wants to know if we can identify who the author is, and you'll see why it's up for a question. Mantana ochel ochel rishon ochel ochel sheni mifso pasle temu yelo matmu. The Gemara wants to know who is the author of this Mishnah in Zavin, where if I ate a rishon or if I ate a sheni, I now become a sheni to pasle, but I don't make the truma tame over here, meaning to the extent in which the truma can then go ahead and transmit the truma to some other truma. Amar Rabba Barachana, we're now on the top of Yudal Amud Aleph, Rabbi Yoshua Hi. So the author of this Mishnah in Zavim is Rabbi Yoshua Dinan, and here we're going to quote a Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Ochel Ochel Rishon Rishon, Va'ochel Ochel Sheni Sheni, and Ochel Shlishi Shlishi. Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, and I've probably said this in the past, in explaining Rabbi Eliezer, you are what you eat. So if you eat food that is a Rishon L'Tumah, you're a Rishon. And if you eat food that is a Sheni L'Tumah, you're a Sheni. And if you eat food that's a Shlishi, you are a Shlishi. So Rabbi Eliezer is going to make a spectrum of Tumah in which you become the same degree of Tumah that which you eat. Now, of course, Rabbi Eliezer is all operating on the Gzeira D'Rabban on a rabbinic level, because again, Min HaTorah, you're not going to become Tameh for eating food that's Tameh. But nevertheless, what he does is he just simply matches the Gzeira D'Rabban and Tumah on the person with the food that he eats. Obviously, the Mishnah Zavim does not reflect the viewpoint of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Ha'ochel Ochel Rishon, Ha'ochel Ochel Rishon, Ha'ochel Sheni, Sheni. If a person were to eat either food that's a Rishon or food that's a Sheni, the person's a Sheni. And it's obvious now that the Mishnah Zavim is following the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua. But here in this Mishnah that we're quoting, it's the Mishnah Taros, so we also get a little bit more information. Shlishi. Now, what if a person ate food that was a shlishi? And the Gemara is going to wonder in just a moment, how are you eating food which is a shlishi? We're not talking about eating truma, we're talking about eating chulin. Now, chulin can only go to the point of a sheni. Chulin cannot become a shlishi. So the Gemara in a moment is going to explain that. But for the time being, let's just read the Mishnah. So if I eat food which is a shlishi, sheni lekodesh, ve'in sheni lechuma. So now, as far as you're concerned, you are going to be Tameh, but limited Tumah. As far as coming into contact with a carbon is concerned, so you have now the status of being a Sheni, which now means the following, that if you touch Kodesh, the Kodesh now is going to be a Shlishi. Now, Kodesh can get up to a Revi. And we've said this time and again, the more Kedusha something has, the more susceptible it becomes to being Tameh. Chulin only goes up to a Sheni. Shuma goes up to a shlishi, Kodesh goes up to a revi. So if I were to eat food which was a shlishi l'tumah, yet to be explained how food can become a shlishi l'tumah, but we'll explain in just a moment. If I eat a shlishi l'tumah, so vis-a-vis Kodesh, I'm on the level of a sheni, which means now that the Kodesh that I touch becomes a shlishi. It, in turn, can then go ahead and transmit that tumah to another piece of Kodesh, of carbon food, v'in sheni l'tumah. However, vis-a-vis truma, you are nothing. Meaning that by you eating the shlishi, you are not impacted at all, not even rabbinically, in that if you were to touch truma, you do not affect the truma at all. Now, question. How could we be talking about chulin, which is a shlishi? And the Gemara goes on to immediately answer that question right now. But chulin shenasu ataras truma. We're talking about chulin that was eaten with the rigors of truma. Now, we've gone over this numerous times. Chulin shenasa ataras truma. Sometimes the expression is chulin shenasa ataras kodesh. And the idea is actually very simple. If a person, let's say, wants to train himself to eat truma, and even though right now, currently, he doesn't have truma, now, obviously, the person who's really interested in training himself is a kohen. Obviously, a non-kohen doesn't really have an interest in training himself to eat truma. He's never going to be a consumer. Or let's say, for example, you're going to go to the Beis HaMikdash and you're just simply not used to eating carbon and all the rules that govern the carbon. So as training, you could treat your chulin as chulin shenasa al taras hakodesh. So in either way, once you give your food the status of chumar or kodesh vis-a-vis the halachas of tumah tahara, so therefore, for the most part, it's going to conform now to the rules of chumah and kodesh, even though it's just spring training. You're just training yourself how to do so. So over here, how can chulin food become a shlishi? Because you're treating it like truma. And so what the Mishnah is now telling us is that under these circumstances where you're treating it like truma, which means that it could become a shlishi, and then it did become a shlishi, and then you consumed it, so vis-a-vis kodesh, you're now a sheni. Vis-a-vis truma, you're nothing. And again, all this is not working on a rabbinic level. Okay. Adkan, all we did now in the last bit of Gemara is just simply identify the author of the Mishnah Zavin as going like Rabbi Yoshua. Fine. With that stated now for the remainder of today's daf, it's a really simple objective, and that is to explain the basis of the Gzera for all the cases of the Mishnah. Why in the Mishnah Zavin did the Chachamim make a Gzera on somebody who eats food that's Tameh and all the other enactments that we learned together in this Mishnah Zavin? And so we're going to go now systematically over every case of that Mishnah Zavin, and we're going to explain what is the basis, what's the thought process behind the Chachamim, why did they make the Gzera D'Rabbanan. Number one, Ochel Ochel Rishon V'Ochel Ochel Sheni. My time of Gazer Bei Rabbanan Tumah. Why did the rabbis make a Gzera? Now, actually, we're going to be covering one and two. The one who, a person who eats food which is a Rishon, the person who eats food which is a Sheni. Dizimnin da achal ochlin tamein v'shakal mashkin da chuma v'shad de lepume apasal lehu. So the Gemara says, actually, pretty straightforward. Because here was the concern of the Chachamim. The concern of the Chachamim is that you're eating a piece of food. Now, let's say it's a Rishon, let's say it's a Sheni. You're eating a piece of food. And the food is Tameh, and again, Min HaTorah, you're totally unaffected. But right now, the food gets a little bit stuck in your mouth, and you want to wash it down. So what do? You take a drink. Now remember, back in the day, it wasn't water, it never was, but rather it was a cup of wine. Now for purposes of illustrating the concern of the Chachamim, let's say this wine was Truma. So now you're going to take the Truma and you're going to put it in your mouth in order to help wash down the food. Ah, if the food was a Rishon or a Sheni Latuma, and the wine then went into your mouth, well, at this point in time, the food is not yet in your stomach and digesting. If it was, then obviously it no longer becomes susceptible to tumah. But it's in your mouth. So now what's going to happen is that this truma wine now that goes into your mouth in order to wash down the food, the truma wine is going to become tameh. Now, if the food is a rishon, it's going to be a sheni. If the food in your mouth is a sheni, the wine is going to become a shlishi. But either way, it's going to become tameh. And as Rashi points out over here, We have the following charge. Rashi upasalahu, he writes, Vatari hizira ala truma l'shamra. We have to safeguard the truma, b'tahara. Dichtivas meshmeres truma sai l'ficha chazru ba'ochal ochlin tamayim shalei ragal eitzel truma. So in order to get us out of the habit of eating truma with food that's tamay, so the Chachamim therefore decreed that if you eat food that's tamay, so you become tamay. And it's basically there to protect, this enactment was there to protect the truma. Okay. That is explanation of Gzeras 1 and 2. Gzera number 3 is going to be very similar. And that is, Gzera number 3, Shosem Mashkim Tamei, and we're just continuing now in the Gemara, Shosem Mashkim Tamei, my Tamagaz Rabbe Rabbanan, Tuma. Why did the rabbis enact Tuma when it comes to drinking liquids that are Tamei? Zimnan de Shosem Mashkim Tamei, and Vishakal Ochlin de Truma, Vishakal Pumei, Apostolahu. So here it's basically the same point. You're drinking wine, truma wine, and then, you're drinking regular wine, and then you are going to, at the same time, put in food, which is truma. And then the tamei wine is going to then, in turn, disqualify the apostle, the truma. Now, if the tamei liquid that you're drinking is a rishon, it'll be metame the truma. If the tummy liquid that you're drinking is a sheni, it'll passel the truma. But either way, that is the concern. Hainuach, the Gemara just simply wants to know, isn't 3 basically the same thing as 1 and 2? But instead, all we're doing over here is, instead of the food being matam of the liquid, we're here just now describing a scenario where the liquid's matam of the food. But it's basically the same thing. So the Gemara says, pretty much you're right. But mao detema, hashchichi v'alo shchichi kamash malan. Yeah, but I might have thought the following. The idea that I have food in my mouth and I'm washing it down with wine, that is something which is usual. It's a common occurrence. And that's 1 and 2. But in the third example, what is it? You drank a liquid and then you're going to put food in at the same time. One could make the argument that's not so usual. Meaning, generally speaking, what do? Is you drink, and as you're drinking, it just goes straight down your throat and it goes into your stomach. And then the food comes afterwards. And the idea that if you drink first, then subsequently you're going to be eating, and that food and that liquid are going to be in your mouth at the same time. And one could have argued that that was an unusual circumstance. So the Chiddush is no. The Chachamim deemed that not to be unusual, and therefore warrants a gzera. Number 4. Habar rosha v'ruba b'mayim shuavim. What you do is you put your head and the majority of your body underneath water that was drawn in a kli. Now here we're talking about mikvos. And the idea over here is as follows. You tovel in the mikvah. And after having tovel in the mikvah, you then take a quick shower. And the Chachamim said, because you took a shower after having gone to the mikvah, so as a result of that, you are going to become tamei. Now, why would that be? My time. So again, the Gemara's question, very simple. What's the thought process behind the Chachamim? And then they made such a gzera. Amar Avibi, Amar Avasi, Shebetchila, Yutovlim, B'mei Ma'aruz, Mekunasin, Usruchim. So Rav Asi explains that originally, when they told him the mikvahs were disgusting. Now, any one of us, myself included, who complains about a mikvah and the lack of cleanliness in the mikvah, so it goes without saying that we are spoiled and we have no idea the kinds of waters that they used to tovel in back in the day. And what they went into was a cave, a stagnant water, and basically it was pooled rainwater, but it wasn't that clean, and I'm sure I'm being nice in describing it. And vayunagan aleihem mayim shuavim, and then after they came out of the mikvah, they felt that they needed a shower. I understand we feel the same way nowadays, but nowadays our mikvahs are, to say the least, significantly cleaner than back in the day. So they felt that they need to take a shower. So itchilav asim keva. And so this almost became like an established custom, where they went into the mikvah, and immediately after having come out of the mikvah, so they went and they took a shower. And gazru aleihem tumah, and so therefore the chachamim wanted to stop this practice, and so therefore they made a gzeir of tumah. So my keva, I'm Rabbi Shai Omrim lo elu matarin ela elu ve'elu matarin. Now when we say keva, what we mean by that is that here's the thought process of the people. They thought that because they saw everybody first go into the mikvah, and then immediately run to take a shower, so they thought, oh, so in order for a person to become tahor, this is how it goes. You tovel in the mikvah, and then you take a shower. And people started actually erroneously believing that you actually needed both. So Amalei Rava, my nafkamina. Now Rava is going to ask the question which perhaps a number of you are already thinking, which is, okay, so they added a step. So what? Hakatavle bahanach. But they toveled in the mikvah. So they added a step. But ultimately, when all said and done, they did tovel in the mikvah. So Rava explains, he fine-tunes the understanding, and that is that what people will walk away saying is that, oh, it's a two-step process, but it's not really a two-step process. It's the showering, which is really the critical part, and then what may end up happening is people are going to dispense with the mikvah and just go right straight to the shower, thinking that the shower would be sufficient in terms of resolving the tumah. The shower will become the source of the tahara. Now, to be honest, to be fair, it's a little bit difficult to understand the thought process. If the mikvahs were as disgusting as the Gemara has just described, how a person would say to himself, oh, it's not really the mikvah, it's really the shower. If you think about it, why in the world would anybody be going into a disgusting pool of stagnant cave water if that wasn't a significant part? It's just challenging for me to fully understand this, but nevertheless, though the Gemara over here gives us a small window into the thought process of the Chachamim, people will dispense with the pool of water, with the cave water, and they'll run straight to the shower, thinking that the shower really is going to be sufficient in terms of the tahara. Okay, and so as a result of that, so in order to discourage this kind of behavior, so the Chachamim slapped a gzeira that if you take a shower after having gone to the mikvah, so then you are going to be, on a derabban level, you're going to be tamei. There is an extensive discussion of whether or not this applies nowadays. Now, nowadays, when we tovel in the mikvah, so primarily, of course, we're talking about the women in terms of becoming tahor from nida, so you can make the argument that this gzeira that we're describing right now is only vis-a-vis tumah tahara, meaning for people who are going to want to eat truma, for people who are going to want to go into the area of the Beis HaMikdash, and you could make the argument that bismanina, that nowadays the gzera doesn't apply because we're not using it for tumah tahara, we're using it for nida. Now, to be fair, nida is also a function of tumah tahara, but it's not ochle kachim, and it's not going into the area of the Beis HaMikdash. And so, right now, without going through sources, it is a debate, a major debate, whether or not this gzera applies bismanenu nowadays, where we're only using the mikvah for nida and not for quote-unquote classic tumah tahara. Continuing, v'tar shenaflo al rosho v'rubo shoshalugim mayim shuavim. We're up to the next of the Mishnah in Zavin, and that is that the person is tar legamre, and what falls on his head and the majority of his body is 3 lugin of water. For that individual, now he becomes tamei rabbinically, and if he comes into contact with the truma now becomes pasul. My time against Rabbi Rabbanan Tama. Again, what is this gzera over here? Diloha lo lo kameha. This gzera is really just a reinforcement of the previous gzera, meaning the previous gzera was not to take a shower immediately after having gone to the mikvah. This gzera is just basically there as a reinforcer, because now what we're telling people is that if they become tamei, if they come into contact with the water that was drawn in a kli, so they are going to become tamei midrabanan under all circumstances, and even if it's not immediately post mikvah, and this is just simply serving to reinforce the previous gzera. Next, sefer. My time goes Rabbi Rabbanan. Why were the Chachamim gozer on a sefer Torah? Now remember, this was in our list number 6 in the Mishnah Zavin. Now this one taught us that when it comes to a sefer Torah, the Chachamim slapped a gzera tuma on the sefer Torah, and according to Rashi, it's also Nevim and Ksuvim as well, where that if Truma now comes into contact with the Sefer Torah, the Truma becomes disqualified. Now, if you think about it, as I pointed out when we learned the Mishnah, that's rather remarkable. The idea that we're taking something which has the highest degree of Kedusha, a Sefer Torah, and meanwhile, the Chachamim slapped a Tuma on it. Why would they do that? The Gemara asked that question. V'sefer Maitama Gazer Bei Rabbanan Tuma. Amar of Misharsha Shabitzchila Ayu Matzninas Ta'ochlin Es Ochlin De Truma Eitzel Sefer Torah. V'amru High Kodesh V'High Kodesh. Here's what the thought process of people was back in the day. Let's say a Kohen got himself hands on Truma, and in getting his hands on Truma, he says, "Where do I store this?" Now, if he puts it in his pantry with all of his other food, that's non-truma, so he runs the risk of losing the truma with the chulin, and he doesn't want to do that. And so he thinks to himself, well, look, the truma has kedusha, and so do my sifrei kodesh have kedusha. Ah, so he comes up with this really good idea. I'll store my truma together with my sefer Torah, because the sefer Torah's got kedusha, and the truma's got kedusha as well. And so that's exactly what the Gemara now is describing. And I'm going back to the Gemara, reading the Gemara. Hayu matzinin sochlin ha-truma eitzel sefer Torah. V'amru, high kodesh, v'high kodesh. They both have kedusha. Kevin dekachazu dekasi lidei pseida. Now here's what happens. Is that even though you have the best hiding place, but nevertheless what's going to end up happening is that it's going to be discovered by rats. The rats are going to get to the truma. Now when they get to the truma, what's going to be right next to the truma? The sefer Torah. And what's going to end up happening is that the Sefer Torah will be consumed by rats. And so as a way of preserving the Sefer Torah, so the Chachamim slapped the Sefer Torah with his Gzeras Tuma de Rabbanan, so that nobody would now put the Truma together with the Sefer Torah. And it's basically a means in which we're going to protect the Sefer Torah. So Gazer Bei Rabbanan Tuma. That is the thought process behind the Chachamim. Next, Yadayin. Mimnesha Yadayin Maskani Osein. So why did the Chachamim slap a Tuma de Rabbanan on hands? That means that hands, if gone uncleaned, unwashed, the hands are in a default status of being a sheni, and the hands, when it comes into contact with the Truma, now the Truma becomes a shlishi. And the reason why the Gemara here gives a very punctuated explanation, because your hands are very busy. They are askanios. Now Rashi over here, really interesting Rashi. I'm reading the Rashi inside. Askanios saying, "V'nogin bibsaro v'makom tinofas." So what your hands end up doing, and Rashi here is describing when you're sleeping, is, and it could be while you're awake as well, but certainly while you're sleeping, is that your hands go basically into the parts of your body which are dirty and disgusting. Now I don't mean tuma tahara, I mean dirty and disgusting. And v'ginay l'truma bekach. And what's going to happen is that those hands now that are hygienically unclean, so they're going to come into contact with Truma. V'nim'as la'ochlin kishenogeh ba b'yadayim mesu'abos. And it says Rashi, what's going to then happen is that the person is going to hesitate from eating the Truma because they were touched by these really dirty hands. That is Rashi's explanation of why it is that the Chachamim slapped a Tuma de Rabbanan on your hands in order to ensure that you would wash your hands, because if you don't, your dirty hands, which came into contact with all dirty parts of your body, are then going to come into contact with Truma, and it will be displeasurable for you to eat the truma. Now, Rashi does point out some take a different approach. Well, some say that the reason why the Chachamim made this gzera derabanan is for the concern that maybe your hands came into contact with something which is tameh, unbeknownst to you. But Rashi says, but that's not the pshat, v'kashali. And Rashi asks three successive questions. One, first of all, if it's a concern that your hands came into contact with tumah, unbeknownst to you, so number one, it could be that your hands came into contact with an avatumah. So why would the Chachamim limit the level of tumah in your hands to be a sheni? Should be at least a rishon. And I say at least, by the way, because your hands could come into contact with a dead body, and then your hands would be an av. But anyway. Number two, va'od, ma'ishna yadam l'chudai b'chol gufa nigzar lifsol truma shem inagu yada b'tumah v'nitma kol gufo. A second question, if the Chachamim's concern was that maybe, unbeknownst to you, you touched something which was tameh, well, what you could have touched was an avatumah, and it's not just your hands that are going to be tameh, it's your whole body becoming tameh. And number three says, Rashi, va'od, lo tiskelu b'netila ela b'tvila. And if, in fact, the concern is that you came into contact with something which was tameh, so then the gzera should be, the resolution should be, tovel n'mikvah. What does that mean, netilas yadayim? You're washing your hands with a cup. Washing with your hands with your cup can only resolve a tumah derabanan. It can't resolve a tumah daraisa. And if the concern is that you came into contact with an avatumah, so the only resolution would be to tovel n'mikvah. So Rashi says that's not it. What it is, what the gzera derabanan is predicated on, is that you came into contact with actual dirt and filth of your own body, there, and subsequently then touched the truma. And the concern is that a person then would not be interested in eating the truma. We go back to the Gemara. Tana. We are about 8 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Tana, af yadam abos machma sefer, posos as a truma. When hands come into contact with a sefer, so it'll pass the truma. Mishum de Rebbe Parnach. And this is based on that which was taught by Rebbe Parnach, Amar Rebbe Parnach, Amar Rebbe Yochanan, Oche sefer Torah Arum, Nikbar Arum. He says that if I touch a sefer Torah Arum, now Arum literally means naked, but naked over here just simply means the point of contact between your hand and the actual cloth of the Sefer Torah. So if you touch the cloth of the Sefer Torah with your hands, and there was nothing separating your hand from the Sefer Torah, meaning you made physical contact with the Sefer Torah, with the cloth, so then Nikvar Arum, you're going to be buried naked. Arum Sagadacha, now the Gemara says, now what does that mean, naked? In other words, you're going to receive a proper burial, you'll get a Tahara, you'll be put on you'll be buried with Tachrichin. What does that mean? So, Ela Amar Rebbe Zera Amrum below mitzvahs. It just simply means that you'll be spiritually naked, meaning you will not have any mitzvahs. So, below mitzvahs, Sakadach, and the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. You violated a halacha, but the idea that you're going to be without any mitzvahs whatsoever, Ela Ema Amrum below os mitzvahs. So, the Gemara says, you will be naked of this particular mitzvah in that you made a direct physical contact with the Sefer Torah, and the Gemara says that the Chachamim instructed us not to do so. And again, the idea is that if you come into contact directly with the Sefer Torah, so your hands are going to if your hands come into contact with the Sefer Torah, your hands now will become a sheni and subsequently pasul the truma. Now, the Gemara is going to make the point, which you just saw in my own head, I stumbled on, and that is, once there's a general gzera derabanan on yadayim, so this sounds like totally unnecessary. And the Gemara now is going to make exactly that point. Hai gaza bereisha, which of these gzeras came first? Meaning, your hands are tamei stam, and if your hands touch a sefer Torah, your hands become now a sheni. Hai gaza bereisha, ilei ma hai gaza bereisha. So, Kavan, we are now on the top of the Amud Beis. Kavan da Achazah Bereisha, Asulamali. If the Yadayim Askanios, if the general Gzera of Yadayim was first enacted, we don't need the subsequent Gzera of your hands coming into contact directly with the Sefer Torah. So, Asulamali, I don't need it. Ela Achazah Bereisha. The Chachamim first instituted the Gzera that if your hands come into contact with the Sefer Torah itself, your hands are now going to become a sheni. And then Hachas Bereishis V'Hadar Gazu B'Kuli Yadayim. And then subsequently came the broadband that your hands are going to become a sheni because of this idea of Yadayim Askanios. Okay. Obviously, the Gemara over here introduces us to a sub gzera in that you're not allowed to touch the Sefer Torah directly. You'll see people are careful about it, and as per the instructions of the Gemara we just learned, you understand that it is gzera derabbanan not to touch the cloth directly. There is halachic discussions regarding what if it's for the protection of the cloth. Let's say after the Hagbah, the Galila went awry, and the cloth itself needs an adjustment. So obviously you should try to adjust the cloth without touching it directly with your hands, but there's certainly room to be makel if it's for the purposes of the actual cloth itself. And there's also another discussion, which I saw, again, I'm not introducing the Maor Makomos right now, about maybe there's a leniency regarding Megillas Esther. Megillas Esther, which is, it's part of Sifrei Tanakh, but it's also described as Nigeris, it's also a letter. And so there could be a leniency regarding Megillas Esther that one is allowed to touch it directly. In fact, Minhag Yisrael is that you handle the Megillah directly with your hands. But it could be that there's room to be makel under those circumstances by Megillah. U'tevul Yom, back to the Gemara. And now that we're up to, of the list, we're up to what would have been number 8, but in the moment we're going to see, it's not going to be number 8. And that's a Tvul Yom, and the Gemara immediately reacts to that. Tvul Yom, Daraisahu. What are you talking about? That's a Din Daraisa Dechsiv of Hashemesh V'Tahir. The Torah says that only when the sun sets, the person is Tahir, which means that until the sun setting, he is still residually Tameh, meaning he already told them the Mikvah, but he still needs the sun to set. So that clearly speaks to the idea that during this interim period, you have a residual Tumah. And the Mishnah is adding it to the list as if it is a Tumah de Rabbanan. So something mikan tvul yom. So the Gemara says, okay, delete it. Doesn't belong in that Mishnah and Zavim. If it doesn't belong in the Mishnah and Zavim, so why is it still there? So we've gone over this numerous times. Once the Mishnah is edited, so it's canon. And at this point in time, the Mishnah is not going to be touched. And there could be, although I don't have in this particular case a good reason why, it could be that there was a good reason why that case was added to the Mishnah, even though categorically it doesn't fit, but certainly, and Tosfos makes this point as well, but in terms of the point the Mishnah is making, it's absolutely correct. Meaning a Tvul Yom is a Sheni, and if a Tvul Yom were to touch Truma, the Truma becomes Pasul, although categorically it doesn't fit. Okay. So why it was left in the Mishnah, even though the Gemara gave instructions to remove it from the Mishnah? Okay, that certainly is a pressing issue. The ha'ochlin shenitmu b'mashkin. Now, food comes into contact with liquid, the food now becomes a sheni. And the Gemara seeks clarification on this point of the Mishnah. B'mashkin demai. Which liquids did the food come into contact with? Ilem b'mashkin nabai machmas sheretz. So if it's liquid that came into contact with the sheretz, so the sheretz is an avatoma. The liquid now is the Rishon. So when the liquid comes into contact with the food is a Sheni. On a Torah level. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. So Ela b'mashkin haba machmas yadayim. So the Gemara says, well, we're talking about liquids that come into contact with your hands. Now remember, your hands are a Sheni. So if it comes into contact with a liquid, what should be the status with a liquid? Well, if it's not Truma, the liquid should be nothing. Because if it's chulin, so we know that chulin is only goes up to a sheni. So if your hands are a sheni and touches chulin, the chulin will be unaffected. So the Gemara explains now, this is the gzera derabanan. The gzera tuma over here is that when your hands, which are a sheni, come into contact with the liquid now jumps up to becoming a rishon. Why? Ugzera misho mashkin haba machmas sheretz. Because it's a gzera, it's an enactment. Because even though in this particular case it came into contact with your hands, which are only a sheni, but the chachamim made a gzera because the liquid may in fact in turn come into contact with a sheretz, and the sheretz obviously being an av, the liquid now becoming a rishon, and so therefore the chachamim made a gzera of your hands because in the next time it may come into contact with a sheretz. Rashi points out over here, interesting, says Rashi, the Chachamim slapped the gzera on liquids. Why don't they slap the gzera on food as well? Because if you think about it, if food comes into contact with the sheretz, we're looking at the same thing. The food now is a rishon. So why did the Chachamim slap a gzera on food? Why did they only slap a gzera on liquid? Rashi responds to that. Rashi writes, you can see the Rashi, gzera mishum ashkem habay machmas sheretz. Rashi writes, da'ashkacham behem shehin rishonim, da'araisa. So Rashi asks exactly this question. Why didn't the Chachamim put the similar gzera on food? Gzera mishum ochel abba machma sheretz. Hainu tam da'achmin rabbanim b'mashkin mishum da'alulin l'kabal tuma she'inan tzrichin tikun hechsher l'avyam l'idei tuma. So liquid bypasses a step. In order for food to become tame, first needs to be come into contact with a liquid. It needs hechsher. And liquid does not need hechsher, which kind of is self-evident, meaning the liquid is creating hechsher, the liquid doesn't need hechsher. And so since liquid immediately becomes susceptible to tumah, so therefore the chachamim were more apt and prepared to put a gzera on the liquid over than that of food, because food needs that extra step of hechsher. So explains Rashi. Back to the Gemara. Vakilim shenitmu b'mashkin. Same thing regarding kelim. Kelim come into contact with mashkin, so the kelim now become a sheni, which in turn is going to pasul truma. The Gemara seeks clarification over here. Kelim de'itmu b'mashkin demai. What liquid did the kelim come into contact with? Elim and b'mashkin de'zav. Are we talking about mashkin of a zav? De'araisa ninhu. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? That's a din de'araisa. De'chziv v'chi yarok ha'zav b'tahor. When the spit of a zav comes out of the zav, we discussed this in Nida, and we're learning this again right now, and that is that the spit has the same status as a zav. The zav is an avatama, the spit of the zav is an avatama. So if the kli comes into contact with the spit of a zav, so the kli is tame on a da'araisa level, and we're talking about gzeiras derabanan. Ela b'mashkin abay machma sheretz. So the Gemara says that the liquid in question over here came into contact with the sheretz, which means that the liquid is a rishon. Rishon liquid min ha-Torah is not going to be metame a kli. But again, the Chachamim said that since we have a liquid that can make a kli tame, notably the spit that comes out of a zav, so consequently, subsequently, the Chachamim therefore extended that to any liquid which was tame, even if the liquid is only a rishon. Adkan. That now allows me to pause and breathe, as we have covered now the 9 gzeras that were taught to us in the Mishnah in Zavin. We took out Tvul Yom, which leaves the list down to 9, and the Gemara now has explained the thought process of the Chachamim regarding all 9 and why the Chachamim slapped a gzera derabanan on all 9. Finishing up the daf, the Gemara now has just some historical loose ends that needs to tie up. The Gemara asked the question, Now, the clear implication of our Gemara over here is that when it comes to Yadayim, the Gzera that was imposed on hands, that the hands are sheni, unless they are washed, so it sounds like that was instituted by the students of Shammai and Hillel. Shammai and Hillel Gazor, what are you talking about? It was actually Shammai and Hillel themselves who made the Gzera. D'tanya, and the Gemara quotes the Braisa, Yossi ben Yoezer, Yishreid of Yossi ben Yochanan, Yishur Shalayim. So here this Braisa is an old Braisa. And by old, I just simply mean that it's quoting early Tanaim. Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan are of the Zugos, which is the Shalshelis. That's the Mesorah, the tradition that takes us back to the beginning of Bayis Sheni, from Shimon, Shimon HaTzadik. And then we start with the Zugos. So we're talking about early Tanaim. And so therefore, these gzeras that we're describing right now are early gzeras that were made towards the beginning of Bayis Sheni. And they made two gzeras that are listed here in this braisa. Gazer tumah al eretz ha'amim, coming into contact with the land outside of Eretz Yisrael. So that land is going to be a source of tumah. We're going to explain this better tomorrow. Al kli zechuchis, and also a glass is going to become susceptible to tumah. Glass is not one of the materials in the Torah that is described as being a source of tumah, and it's by gzera derabbanan the glass is going to become susceptible to tumah. Shema meshetach tikin ksuv al isha. Shema meshetach, another one of the zugos. So he instituted the ksuva. Vigazatuma al kli matachos. And he made a gzera on the tumah of metal. We're going to explain that better tomorrow. In terms of what gzera did he make? Metal is susceptible to tumah on a Torah level. So that we'll explain later. And by later, I mean tomorrow. Shama vehilo gazu tumah al hayadayim. And in this brisa, Shammai and Hillel were given given credit to having made the gzera on Yadayim. And so the problem over here, it's a historical problem. Who made the gzera on Yadayim? So we're conflicted. On one hand, we say it's the students of Shammai and Hillel, and in this brisa, we're saying it's actually Shammai and Hillel. V'chitem Shammai v'siyato v'hillel v'siyato. Now, perhaps the right way to understand this brisa, it just simply means Shammai in his constituency, Hillel and his constituency, v'amar of Yehuda Mashmol Yuches Davar Gazru, uvi Yuches Nechluku, v'ilu Hillel v'Shammai lo Nechluku ela b'gimel makamos. We have a tradition given to us by Shmuel that it was on 18 enactments that they made a gzera. It was on these 18 enactments that there was a debate, and Hillel and Shammai themselves only had a machlokus on 3 issues. Those 3 issues, by the way, we'll go over tomorrow. So, the Amar Rav Huna begimel makamos nechluku v'sulo. And only on these 3 and then no others. V'chitim asu inu gazer litlos v'asu tamidav v'gazer lisrof. And so the Gemara now is trying to make the following suggestion. Maybe Hillel and Shammai made the first enactment when it comes to Yadayim. But only that if the Yadayim come into contact with Truma, I'm not going to burn the Truma, but rather what we're going to do is Tola. We'll just leave the Truma in limbo. Not to destroy it, but also not to eat it. And then, subsequently, the next generation, Beit Shammai, so they increased the gzera, where if the hands come into contact with truma, you're going to actually burn the truma. The Gemara says, V'amar yelfa yadayim t'chilas gzera sam l'sreifa. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we know apparently that's just simply not true. The original institution of hands, of yadayim, is that if the yadayim, once the chachamim made gzera on the yadayim, if the Adayim come into contact with Truma, the Truma is going to be burnt. And that was done at the point of origination. So, Ela Asi Inu Gazer V'lo Kiblu Minayu V'Asi Tamidah V'Gazer V'Kiblu Minayu. So the Gemara now offers the following suggestion, that maybe Hillel and Shammai made the Gzera, but it didn't take. And then the students made the Gzera, and then it took. V'Akati Shlomo Gazer. Now the Gemara says, okay, that may be possible, but we also are going to be conflicted because we have another tradition that Yadayim and the Gzera of Yadayim go all the way back to Shlomo HaMelech, hundreds and hundreds of years prior to Hillel and Shammai. The Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, B'Shah Shetikin Shlomo Eruvin V'Nitilas Yadayim Yatzah Basko V'Amra. At the time where Shlomo HaMelech made 2 Gzeros, one is Eruvin, and the other is Nitilas Yadayim, the Basko comes out and says, B'ni Im Chacham Libeich Yismach Libi Gamani. Chacham bani v'samech libi v'ashiva chorifai davar. So, we have a tradition that the gzera of Yadayim goes all the way back to Shlomo HaMelech. So, asa Shlomo gazel l'kachim. So, the Gemara now resolves all this. And the Gemara says like this. Shlomo HaMelech did make a gzera in Yadayim, in that you must wash your hands before you eat. But before eating what? So, Shlomo HaMelech's gzera is only going on karbanos. So, also Shlomo, as we are now on the top of Tesvav Amud Aleph, and he made a gzera on Kachim. Vasu ina v'gazer af l'truma. And it was Hillel and Shammai, followed subsequently by the students of Hillel and Shammai, who then made the gzera, extending it even to truma. This is the sequence and series of gzeras on Yadayim. And so now we have basically jumped over the hurdle of who actually made the gzera on Yadayim. It was done in stages. Shlomo HaMelech regarding Kachim, Hillel and Shammai regarding Truma, and then the students in order to reinforce the Gzera so that it would take. And where does that leave us off right now? So we are, just finishing with the Daf, so a quick recap of today's Daf, actually pretty straightforward. The Mishnah on yesterday's Daf introduced us to this idea that there were 18 Gzeras that were enacted on that day when they went to go visit Hananiah ben Chizkiah up in his attic. And the Mishnah says that the previous Mishnah introduces to 2 of them, delousing and reading by a lantern on Friday night. And so what we did today is we learned the Mishnah in Zavin, where there are 9 Gzeirah D'Rabbanan that were enacted by the Chachamim in the world of Tumah. All of them will result in the idea that either the person or the food or the kli is going to be a sheni l'tumah, and so that if it comes into contact with truma, the truma now becomes a shlishi, otherwise known as pasul. And what we did over the course of this morning is we first identified who the author of the Mishnah and Zavin is. It's Rabbi Yoshua. And then we went through each one and we learned what is the thought process of the Chachamim in making a gzera on each and every one of them. Everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.